The Shire of Nanup would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri and Boonwurrung people of the Noongar Nation as the traditional custodians of the land of which this podcast is recorded on, and we extend our respect to the elders past and present, and we extend that respect to all Aboriginal Australians living within the Shire of Nanup.
I'm laughing because I remember it. I was standing up here watching someone performing and I suddenly thought, oh my God, I don't remember getting an addition onto my insurance for this. And so I'm standing there in the middle of the concert ringing my insurance company saying, oh, can I just add on a concert to our insurance claim into our insurance policy? And they said, yeah, when's it starting? And I said, oh, probably about an hour ago.
This is the Nanup Oral History Podcast. We're here on this very chilly morning, enjoying the warmth of the log fire at Holbury House, talking to owner Louise Stokes. Louise talks about the long history of Holbury House and its surrounds, the creation and enjoyment of the open garden, and its ties to the Nanup Music Festival. She also talks about the many hats she's worn over the years and details how the Nanup stock route became a regional trail. Louise shares personal anecdotes that highlight the way cultural diversity has been embraced in Nanup. Good morning, Louise.
Hello. So my name is Louise Stokes, and along with my husband, Chris, we arrived here 25 years ago. We'd actually bought property here 27 years ago, and we were at the time living in Quarrumup. We'd just sold our property, and we had loved this property, which was previously called The Lodge, for the 5 years prior to that. And we'd been on the market, but it was too expensive, so it wasn't something that we could consider. We wanted to bring our children up in an environment where they had a country lifestyle, but we wanted them to be living in town because I just did not want to have to drive, particularly on some of the windy roads that we have around here, four times in and out of town, and then the after-school activities and for work and everything. So this property ticked all our boxes. The property was established and open to the public in 1985. We moved here in the year 2000. We had purchased property up on the Bailing Up Road 2 years prior to that. That was just a plantation block. We were here for quite some time, and Holbury House doesn't have young children to stay. And because we're double storey, sometimes seniors have problems getting up the stairs. So that's why we originally bought a cottage on the main street, which is now called Poppy's Place. And so that caters to families and is all one level, and it's accessible, so it's suitable for older people or people with mobility issues. So if someone rings me up wanting to stay and it's not suitable for Holbury, I can say, I can't have you stay here. However, we do have a property on the main street. Would you like to look at that? Here's the photos, and ring me back if you'd like to book. So that was about 30% of our trade in the original times that we would be sending off that we retained for ourselves.
And when did you buy Poppy's Place?
We've had Poppy's Place since about 2016. So this was the property that ticked all the boxes for us.
So starting back at the beginning with Holbury House, can you tell us more about that?
Oh, it was amazing. So when we purchased the property, it was operating at 3% occupancy. It was called The Lodge. It had a really bad reputation at the time. And so we knew that we had to rebrand and rename. So we called it Holbury House after Chris's maternal grandmother. We just loved the fact that it could be known as a family house, even though there was no connection from her to the property. And it took us a while to integrate into the first place, into the community, because we were seen as the people up on the hill, and the property had a really bad reputation in town for paying accounts, and so it took us a good 3 months to get people to understand, hey, we're different, we will pay our bills on time. So just that whole setting up a new business and just trying to get credit rating back and getting value into the community was an interesting experience that I'd never had to go through before. For us, we haven't had to do too much inside, so that apart from, you know, your soft furnishings and beds and everything that you're constantly changing over, outside is where we spend our time. And the kids were great. So at the time they were 3 and 6, so Emma started school and Nicholas would just help us every day. We just had the ute and the trailer and we just did like 10 loads to the tip every single day. The grass was like knee high. It took us 2 years just to find a platform that we could work with or a blank canvas, and then we could start to create gardens. So it was just a lot of just chopping out wattle. The place was just full of wattle, even behind us. We look back at photos and we go, I can't believe, you know, what we arrived to was incredible. So within 3 months, we were operating at 30% occupancy. And then since between then and COVID, up to when COVID hit, look, it was a viable business, but it certainly wasn't a massively profitable business. It was often one where you go, oh my gosh, you have to rob Peter to pay Paul to pay the bills. But for us, it was a lifestyle business, and that's what we were looking for with our kids. We wanted to be able to have the kids with us at all times and not have to go out to work if we didn't want to. But it was a beautiful sense of community. And we saw that across all the sports as well. I loved watching that social connections that the kids were able to develop as they grew up. And they've retained a lot of their friendships now into adulthood from growing up in a small country town. And even when they went to get a job, the day they turned 14, we said, right, go into town and get a job. So Nicholas walked into the bakery in the Blackwood Cafe, the Blackwood Winery, and he came back with a job. And Emma walked into the pharmacy and came back with a job. I think they soon realised when they moved to the city that it's not as simple as just walk into a shop and ask for a job. But the Nanup shopkeepers were extremely supportive of young kids who wanted to work. And even if there wasn't a job, they'd find a job for them.
Is there something about Nanup at that time that brought new people in?
The benefits to moving to a country town with clean air. And also there was a real resurgence in homeschooling and people wanting to just look at lifestyle with their kids and quality of life with their kids. So people were trying to move out of the city and just have that time with their children. It was a reality that Nanup was a safe place for people in fragmented or broken families to come and stay. So Mum would bring the kids down. It was quite difficult for Dad to get access to the kids because it's very limited public holiday, and rent was extremely cheap, and so they could afford to live here. And we had a lot of blended families and single families at that time move in. It was really interesting then to see blended families all get together, and they just really formed a great social nucleus and really supported each other, which was really lovely.
Would you say there's been another surge of that recently?
Yes.
How was it different to that time that you're talking about?
Back then it was holistic, I think. Now it's essentially due to rental availability and price availability. So Nanup rents are still quite cheap in comparison to other towns. So I think Busselton, you know, your minimum's about 700 that you're looking for rent. I've just heard of one property just go recently for $700 in Nanup, and everyone's going, oh, wow, you know, how can they charge that much? And generally rents are still around $400 to $500 in Nanup. So big difference, $200 a week.
And would you say that when people arrive in Nanup for rental availability, do they stay here? Do they work here? What do you think Nanup's looking like now for new people?
It's a really interesting question, actually, and can be looked at in a couple of different ways. One of the things I love about Nanup is that it's accepting. So it accepts people if they just want to come and live in the forest and not have anything to do with town. It accepts people if they come here for their own personal reasons, whether it's trauma that they're getting over or if they want to be really involved with community. So people are moving here for really different reasons. Some people think they can just totally go under the radar in Nanup, and it's the absolute opposite. So if they're trying to come here and hide because they're trying to get away from the law, they'll really soon be found and very quietly moved on. So that's one element of what people are coming for. The current trend of homeschooling, they're finding their own really beautiful community here. And so we're finding that they're getting more and more entrenched in the community, and their kind of social network is growing. Other people come here, think it's going to be something that they're looking for, and maybe find that it's not. So they're moving on. Certainly the rental crisis is affecting a lot of people, and if their house is sold, they can't find anything, then they're having to move on.
I'd love you to talk about your community involvement over time.
Probably our first involvement with community when we moved here was the Nanup Music Festival, and can't even remember how I got involved or why. I don't remember the conversations, but we ended up being the main venue for the Nanup Music Festival in our lower garden, which was a really beautiful experience. And we were the main venue for a couple of years until the concert size grew to about 1,000 people. And then the amphitheatre was coming on board anyway. So then we moved to the amphitheatre. I'm laughing because I remember it. I was standing up here watching someone performing, and I suddenly thought, oh my God, I don't remember getting an addition onto my insurance for this. And so I'm standing there in the middle of the concert ringing my insurance company saying, oh, can I just add on a concert to our insurance claim into our insurance policy? And they said, yeah, when's it starting? And I said, oh, probably about an hour ago. And I said, how many people is it for? I said, oh, about 1,000 people. And they're like, yeah, no problems, we can do that. So, yeah, even though we were covered by the music festival, it's like, oh, you probably need to have your own insurance for that. So,
yeah.
Yeah, when it got to 1,000 people, it was just too much on the property, so we moved out. The music festival moved out. But one of the things that we really quickly realised with this property is that we are just the custodians of Holbury House, that it is a community asset. During the construction of this property 40 years ago, it was the first real employment for a lot of the hippies. So we were here about a week and people would just start wandering through. And at first it was a bit affronting. I was like, oh, hi, can I help you? And then they'd say, oh, I'm just checking on the tree that I planted in 1926, or I'm just checking on the rock wall that I made, or something like this. And we're like, oh, wow, this isn't our place. This is a community place. And that was one of the major rationale for us to establish the gardens as an open garden, not only because at the time there were just really limited attractions for people to do whilst they're in the area. And one of the things that we always tried to do is to get people to extend their stay or book for longer nights, but that we wanted people to feel comfortable to actually come in here. So by once the gardens were to a point where we could promote them, by setting up the donation box at the front gate, then people would feel comfortable just to come in and walk around at their leisure. But it's been really beautiful to see the kindy kids and the playgroup kids come through to check on the ducklings and watch the ducks and play in the gardens. And then they might come back with their parents and their families on weekend. And then you see the kids sneak in after school and catch up. And then might come back with their boyfriend or girlfriend and just, you know, muck around in the garden. And then they come back in for their school ball photos. And they come back for their engagement and then their wedding. And that's really special to see the generational kind of value of the property.
I'm so glad you touched on that because your garden is so magnificent. Can you paint a picture for the listeners of your garden? Because it's just so magical.
So the lower gardens are what we classify as a parkland garden. So we're really fortunate we have this amazing canopy of trees in our gardens. And when we established the garden, the rationale was if you can't mow it, it's a garden bed. So we spent a lot of time developing the gardens. We would look for plants that were unusual, shade-loving. And so we originally went for a mass planting of the species that we were looking for. We wanted colour and diversity in the garden, so throughout the seasons we were looking for different colours, and then we started to introduce the sculptures just to add another element of what we could basically showcasing the grounds. The benefit of that also was that for local artists, if they didn't have a gallery, there was really nowhere that they could exhibit their works, particularly if they were large or outside works. We charge a really low commission, so it's affordable for people to be able to put their works in, but also for people to buy. So there's a constant changeover of works in the garden. And we appreciate people coming through. We have tour groups that come through regularly, and because the gardens at the bottom are quite flat, it's easy for the seniors to come in and just have a picnic, have a wander around, just sit and just be present.
You don't really get those experiences very often.
I don't know. I think we're really fortunate in Nanup.
So thank you for creating that space for people. I'm particularly interested in the history of people planting here, having a connection to the place, it being a community space in some regards. Can you tell us a little bit more of the history of Holbury House and the surrounds?
So the property was built 40 years ago and was opened as a bed and breakfast. Prior to that, it had been a dairy, well, I'd call it a dairy farmlet. So when the stock route operated up until the 1970s, this was the overnight stop area before they went down to Scott River. So where the bottom shed is, that used to be an old dairy. So they would come in, milk the cows, and then continue on across to the Scott River. The other thing that this property was prior to being established was that they would use where the house is was the landing area to bring the pine logs down from the forest. And prior to that, Indigenous engagement on the property was the birthing rocks at the top on the Dunnet Road edge is where the Aboriginal ladies would have their babies. And at the bottom of the property was a burial grounds. So it has a very rich cultural history.
Wow, that's incredible. I didn't know it went so far back.
Yeah.
So tell us about the other hats you wear.
So at the same time as the music festival, I became involved in the Nanup Flower and Garden Festival. So I've held a number of committee positions, whether it be sponsorship, secretary, deputy chair, and really have continued my engagement with the Flower and Garden Festival, even though I'm not on the committee now. I've still always been involved with that group and continue to be now as a venue and really just there to support in the background wherever I can. Other community roles I've had, I suppose, would be in emergency management. So I'm a Red Cross volunteer working in the emergency management space and have just received the 10-year service medal for Red Cross. Red Cross in emergency services doesn't do so much in its local area unless it's an emergency, but we activate in other states. So I work on a program where when volunteers return from their service, we do a wellbeing checkup with them. And so it's something I can do from home and it's just really low key, but people value having those conversations and just making sure that they're valued in the role that they do, but also that someone is caring enough to make a call to them to check that they're okay. It's also a mechanism that we can feed back to Red Cross if there's anything within the process of the deployment that we need to check up on and maybe streamline for next time. So that's my involvement with Red Cross. But also, if there was an emergency here, then we can activate and support Department for Communities or the Shire in the work that they do in recovery. Whilst I was working at the Shire, so I worked at the Shire for 17 years, I started off in the role of community development, and prior to that I'd been the coordinator of the Volunteer Resource Centre at the Community Resource Centre. So that's how I arrived at the Shire of Nanup. When I first started at the Shire, there was a blank canvas that I could work with and I had no real manager, so I was very autonomous. In one respect that was great because I could pretty much do whatever I wanted to do. On the other hand, it meant that there was very little support there for me. So, and I had no budget, which was the other consideration. So you just had to think just so laterally, and it really did envelop what community development is all about, which was just using the community to facilitate and to network and to make sure that what they want is actually done, but that they do it themselves. Because I, as one person, I couldn't do it. And I covered so many different sectors. So it wasn't just community development at the time, it was also economic development, emergency management, disability, youth, seniors. And I can't even remember half of them that we had to do. But back then the reporting wasn't what it is now. After a while I moved into economic development because the areas of community that we'd set up were just really working. So youth was really working. They were just self-managing. Seniors were self-managing. So we just saw an opportunity to move more into economic development and to look at, okay, what do we actually need to make NANUP or to support NANUP in moving forward? So one of the first projects we worked on was a childcare centre. So we'd identified that it was really difficult for families to move to town because there was no childcare, or there was one childcare that was a home-based childcare centre. So setting up the childcare centre really was transformative in NANUP's economic transition because it allowed young families that wanted to work to move to town. And what it did was it encouraged service providers to come in. So suddenly electricians and plumbers and all of those services that we'd had to call from Busselton or Manjimup could come and be based in NANUP. So that was a really big one. Also meant that people who wanted to start working from home could come and live in NANUP. So accountants and IT support as another example of people that could start to move to town. The next big project we worked on was the rec centre redevelopment, which was the first project I'd worked on over $1 million. And from there, we started to work on the trails. And that was a really interesting experience because it brought in consultation with a whole different sector of the community that we hadn't really had to engage with too much previously. It was really an initiator as to what could actually happen within the trails.
Why did the trails conversation start?
I think it was really organic. We were a leader in that. I think the stock route was something that had been pushed from community, so someone was already doing work in it. We supported them in that, and then we found out once we submitted our grant application, Bridgetown and Manjimup were also looking at a stock route as well. So we contacted them and said, hey, why can't we all work together on this? And then it became a regional project.
Can you tell us about the stock route, its full name and a little bit about it?
So for the Warren Blackwood stock route is for horses, and it follows the original road or routes that the horses used to take the cattle. So they would go down to the coast and then they'd come back inland. For NANUP, it was from basically the town areas out to the Scott River. The alignment is pretty close to what the original stock route was. The reality is where they would drive the cattle is now a main highway. So we can't have the stock route along the highway. However, we do have roads that run parallel that the stock route runs on.
That's amazing. We had Robert and John Dummett come and talk to us about, and so that's the route that they would have taken?
Yes.
That's incredible. It's amazing that it's been captured as a trail.
It's fantastic. And the interpretation and the fact that we could include some of the oral histories of the families that were involved in that was a great project.
So were you involved in the oral histories in 2015?
Yes. It was a great project. So we worked with the Bunbury Oral History Society, and so that was through Bill Bunbury. And then they invited the Harvey Oral History Society and the Busselton Oral History Society, which was Marg Tickle and Margaret Dawson, to come down. So We put out to the community and said, who do you think would be great to capture the oral history of? And then the Oral History Society came down and they ran a workshop so that interested community members could learn how to do the oral history and how to use the equipment. And then we married up people who wanted to have their oral history told in partnership with someone who wanted to capture their oral history. Then, so that was all collected on tape. Copies were then given to the participants, to the Nanup Historical Society and to the Beattie Library. And I think in total we captured about 10 to 12 oral histories. Only one was registered that was only to be released upon their death, because she wasn't comfortable with some of the things that she had said. But it was a great program to be involved with.
What do you think the real benefit is of sharing these oral histories?
Oh, I think it's so valuable. Oral history is another mechanism to be able to just showcase the current, the past, but also for future generations to understand the history, not only of their own families but of the area and of society.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's been a real honour being able to be involved in the interviews.
That's a really good way to put it. It's very honourable to be part of it.
We haven't heard anything about the Rec Centre development. Are you okay to tell us a little bit more about that, when it was and what it was?
The Rec Centre project was one. So the Sport and Rec Association wanted to develop basically a function area. So there was nowhere at the time where functions could be hosted in town. It then kind of grew crazy because we realised, oh, we need more toilets. Oh, the showers needed to be upgraded. And the more consultation you do, the more everybody wants everything put in it. Came back down to just toilets and showers and the new function area, including the bar and the commercial kitchen. So the project changed quite a bit in its scope throughout the process.
You talked before about cultural diversity and your knowledge of that in Nanup. Can you share that with us?
Definitely. It's really just a personal anecdote, which I thought was really something that, again, solidifies Nanup as a very accepting community. It was quite interesting to be a bystander and to watch that cultural diversity just sort of, I suppose, happen since we've moved here. So when we moved here, I know our children they'd never come across anybody of Aboriginal heritage. They had not seen an Asian person. Nanup was just white people, farmers, and that was, you know, timber industry, and that was pretty much it. I remember one day there was talk that there was a Chinese family moving into the mill, and at the time I was working at the Shire, I rang the mill and I said, have you got a house for them and is everything sorted? And they said, yep, we're all ready to go. On the Sunday morning, these two gentlemen wandered down. At the time, Kevin Bird was doing the renovations on the town hall and he was up on the roof doing some roofing. And these gentlemen walked up, and through their translator, they said, which was a little handheld thing that looked like it was out of the 1940s, it was so archaic, they said, can we help you? And Kevin Bird said, I'd love you to help me, but, what are your skills? And they said, we're here to work at the mill. And he said, I can't pay you. And they said, no, we cannot receive any money because we're on a visa. And it was just lovely to see that relationship start of every weekend. They would come down and help work on the town hall. It quickly became apparent that these families didn't speak any English and that they needed furniture and they needed support. Within the first week, furniture had just arrived at their house. Two bikes were left out the front. Load of soil arrived at the mill for them to start their veggie gardens. Within 6 weeks, there was Asian vegetables and fruits and things just being distributed around town, and suddenly we had bok choy and things that Nanup had never seen before. And we started up a group through Ian Benporath, who was at Mythic Mazes, and he was a translator between Mandarin and English. Once a week, someone would drive them into Busselton so that they could deposit their money into the bank, which went back to their Chinese family. Then their families moved out, and the young children, through Val Russell's, had an English support group set up through the school, and so they were teaching the kids to speak English. So it was just really lovely to see that community embrace, the diversity start to come in. We then had Rosa arrive from Russia, and when Rosa was learning to drive, word would really quickly go out, "Rosa's on the road, everybody keep off." And Rosa unfortunately eventually got her license. I think she's a great driver now, but for the first 5 years it was really, really tricky. The cultural diversity of Nanup is one that I think we can be very proud of.
I would agree with that. It does seem very welcoming to everybody. What does Nanup mean to you?
To me, Nanup is home. What it means is that when you drive in and you just go, you just feel at peace. I love that you can drive your car and you can wave, and even if you don't know the person, they'll still wave back. There's an acceptance, there's a sense of value. I love that if you go down to check the mail, it can take up to 2 hours because you just end up chatting to someone down the street. I love that people feel comfortable enough that they can come and confide in you, or they can just ring up and say, "Hey, do you want to just come out for a sneaky drink at the brewery?" I love that you can just do what you want, when you want. And if you don't want to socialise with people, you don't have to. So it's been somewhere that we've been able to raise our children. They've enjoyed having a country lifestyle. I think Nicholas was 15 and before he realised that not everybody had place where they could kick a football in their backyard. And he came home from school and he was like, he'd been to play at someone's house and he said, "Where do they kick their football?" And I said, "Well, they have to go down to the park. You know, people don't have quarter acre or acreage for their houses anymore." He couldn't understand that. So I think raising your children in an environment like this is not something that's afforded to everybody. I feel for city people that they don't get to enjoy this lifestyle like we've been able to, but we're very fortunate.
Well, thank you so much. I know you're a business owner, volunteer, shire worker, raised a family, so lots of aspects to your life in Nanup. Thank you so much for sharing them with us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You've been listening to the Nanup Oral History Podcast. If you are not a Nanupian, please come and visit our small town. We would love you to come. If you are a Nanupian, please share it with your family and friends. We're really proud of this, and we hope you are too.
This podcast was made possible through the successful funding by the Department of Community's Age Friendly Community Program, facilitated through the local government's professionals and supported by the Shire of Nanup. We would like to thank all of those who have shared their stories to make this podcast happen. The podcast has been produced by the Shire of Nanup's Economic and Community Development Team and edited by Simple Ben Stories.